Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we've got a great show for you tonight lined up, and we're going to jump in real quick because we've got Dr. Joe on the phone and he's only got a little bit of time to sit with us, so we're going to get right to things, which means I've got to bring in my esteemed co-host, Sam Bradley. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jamie. Yeah, it's amazing how when we start talking about a potpourri episode, all of these things pop in. But we're going to jump to Dr. Joe. Two things I'd like to cover with him. What the heck are you doing out there? And any news on COVID?
Well, so this week we're actually teaching a critical care flight medic and flight paramedic course. And that's going very well. So that's what's got me tied up this week. As far as a quick COVID update, the Delta variant is growing very aggressively. The issues with it appear to be significantly greater infectiousness, I guess is the right word there, meaning that the virus is much easier to transmit from person to person. And that's thought to be due to a couple of different things. One is the virus, when it replicates in your nasopharyngeal passages, produces a significantly greater amount of virus that you then cough or sneeze out. So there's a lot more viral load floating around for people to come in contact with. And that virus may be present in your nasopharyngeal passages for 3 or 4 days as opposed to about 2 days with the original variant of the virus. So folks are producing more virus and they're producing it for a longer period of time, particularly asymptomatic folks, which I think has been part of the reason that we're seeing such a tremendously accelerated spread of this bug.
So COVID's come back with a vengeance. You can't kill us. But, you know, one thing that's a big controversy is schools and whether or not they're going to have a mask mandate. Because some say, in fact, here in Colorado, I saw an article, there won't be a mask mandate. But a lot of people disagree with that. What do you think?
Well, there's no question that masking may, you know, just to prevent you from potentially inhaling a large number of virus particles, and knowing the fact that the folks that you're going to be around have almost twice as much time to be asymptomatic and infectious, therefore you have twice as much possibility for exposure. So I think masking and distancing make just as much sense as they did with the original version of the virus, probably more so now. I think with all the vaccination of our older population, we're clearly seeing protection from the vaccines, and we're seeing much greater numbers in younger folks now. So about 90% of current hospitalizations are among the unvaccinated population, and obviously that tends to be the 25 to 45 year olds, that's generally the parents of the children that are in school. And so those kids in school are dependent upon the adults around them to be protected, safe, and vaccinated. And so I think it's definitely possible we'll see a much greater incidence of the infection in kids than we did with the last big rush of the virus that we saw.
Boy, Jamie, you have any thoughts for Joe?
Yeah, just real quick, Joe, what are your impressions on the resilience of medical and hospital staff in your experience right now? How are folks holding up with the surge that's happening? How are nurses and physicians on the front lines managing?
I am very concerned, quite honestly. In the Southeast in particular, hospitals are very near capacity. EDs are beyond capacity. I think the idea of, you know, travelers and that kind of stuff coming in, the cavalry sort of arriving to help out is extremely unlikely this time around. We are seeing a fair number of medical and nursing staff just say they've had enough and quit and go do something else. So I think we have a smaller number of providers and an ever increasing and probably larger number of sick people by the time this thing is over. We're predicting our peaks to come in the next 2 weeks or so, and we're already right at capacity on ICU and floor beds and ventilators and all kinds of stuff. So there's definitely serious concern in particularly the hard hit areas like the southeastern United States that we're going to exceed our ability to take care of all these folks.
Oh my God. Becky or Dan, you got any questions for Joe? Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's as two vaccinated individuals, we've been really trying to figure out how to approach this. I mean, in the heat of the pandemic, before we were vaccinated, we were not eating indoors. We were always masking. And now we're at this really weird gray area. Like, it seems like, Joe, you would recommend masking indoors no matter what your vaccination status is, which is fine. But as far as like restaurants and, you know, where do you draw the line if you're a pretty healthy young person that is vaccinated?
Yeah, I vaccination provides you a pretty high level of protection. I think masking is an additional layer of protection. I'm tending to mask as well. And I think that, you know, if you look at the vaccinated people that have gotten sick, have seemed to have potentially been exposed to very high viral loads, meaning lots and lots and lots of virus in a very short period of time. And that was enough to kind of overwhelm their initial immunological response. And so, you know, the idea that a mask might keep you below that threshold when folks are in public places and producing lots and lots and lots of virus. So I think it's definitely a good idea to continue masking and distancing and all that sort of stuff whenever you're out in public, and particularly when you're in spaces where you can't separate yourself or, for example, be outdoors where your exposure is reduced.
I guess there's something to be said for keeping your immune system intact too. Dan, you have a thought?
Yeah, I think I agree with Becky's comment there. And also I think just from the local area here, we live in State College, and Penn State, obviously a very large university, a lot of interesting discussions around Penn State, as I'm sure there are around a lot of other colleges and universities in this country right now about, you know, whether to mandate a vaccine, whether to mandate masks. And there's just been interesting discussion about what that, you know, what that should be. In Penn State's case, they have decided to not mandate vaccines. About half the Big Ten universities have decided to mandate vaccines with certain exemptions. And I guess an interesting thing that I've seen talked about recently on Twitter and other places is the goal, and it really depends on the person, I think, but I think it's an interesting topic of conversation, is the goal to not get the virus if you're vaccinated, or is the goal to sort of live your life, and if you get it, you should be trust the vaccine and, you know, to basically mitigate any impacts if you are not considered high risk. So I think it's an interesting conversation. Like, at this point in the pandemic, is the goal to not get it at all? And I think it depends on who you are.
I think that's a great point. It's very clear that the vaccine significantly, and I mean markedly significantly, reduces the severity of illness. It dramatically reduces your chances of hospitalization and really dramatically reduces your chance of dying from the virus. So there are great protective effects there. And I think that's part of the reason that we're seeing many schools particularly begin to, FEMA, for example, is now mandated that all of their operational folks are vaccinated. U.S. military the same way. So part of the goal there is to at least reduce the chance that otherwise young, fairly healthy people would have a really severe illness. And instead would only have a mild respiratory illness that's unlikely to, you know, put them in the hospital or result in their death. So it's a bit of a risk benefit management strategy to say it makes more sense to get the vaccination and reduces the chance that you're going to be in the hospital and you're going to be really sick and on and on and on. And I think that's why we're beginning to see a lot of folks doing that. You know, I think part of the important thing to remember is that if you got vaccinated today, you have virtually no additional protection for a couple of weeks. It begins to increase, the antibody count begins to go up in a couple of weeks or so. And that after a month, you're at maybe 50-50, and that second dose of vaccine a month later, sort of in another couple of weeks, will push you up to the, you know, 90%+. So in reality, starting your vaccination process today really means about 6 weeks before you reach maximum protection. So you're still at risk, even if you get vaccinated tomorrow. For at least the next 6 weeks or so until you develop enough antibodies to really provide yourself the level of protection we were just talking about.
And there's not only mandates, but I read somewhere where one university is charging incoming students $750 extra dollars if they have not been vaccinated. So,
and that's actually to cover the cost, because if they're not vaccinated, they have to do additional testing every week. So that is a testing charge that they can avoid if they're vaccinated. They don't have to test, and that's something. So, Dan, did you have something to jump in with, or was that an earlier comment?
No, that was my earlier one there, okay. Jamie.
Becky, did you started to pop in. Did you have anything else?
Yeah, I don't know if Joe can speak to this at all, but I saw, I think it was yesterday, some new guidance came out related to the vaccine and pregnancy. And I know, you know, pretty much up until now, a lot of women who were pregnant had been a little bit hesitant because there wasn't a lot of data surrounding how the vaccine would impact that. And by all accounts now, it seems very safe and, in fact, very good for both the mother and the baby. And I didn't know if you had any further thoughts on that.
Well, I think you summed it up very nicely. You're right. There's a pretty good amount of that shows that the vaccine is very safe in pregnancy and may impart some value to the born infant. Obviously, the infant's going to have, you know, antibodies from the parent present at birth, but those are going to, you know, fade away over the first few weeks. So the fact that the mother could pass along those antibodies to the baby would be protective of the baby as well. So I think certainly pregnancy related right now, particularly after the first trimester, absolutely vaccination makes sense there.
Well, that's good to know. That's all great info, Joe. And there's a lot of that I didn't know as much as we talk about it, because it shows it's an ever-changing thing. And clearly we'll be having more discussion on it. So we'll let you go run off and take a break from what you're doing all day. And you're not here, Nick. You have a thing next week, right?
Yeah, I think I have an interesting guest that I'm actually talking to today. He's actually part of our class, who was asking questions about if I'm a ES provider and I interested in new skills, new drug or whatever, how do I present to my medical director so I can get that person on board? And so I thought that was a really good topic to talk about, all things that go into thinking about a change in protocol, an addition of a new drug or skill.
Oops, we lost him. Indeed, that is a good topic, and we haven't addressed the management level for some time. So I'll get back with Joe and we can set that up. In the meantime, we're just going to touch on a couple topics that certainly are worthy of at least one full podcast, but we kind of want to get back to basics here. So, Dan, what's going on with the hurricanes out there, or almost hurricanes, or potential hurricanes?
Yeah. Well, we're certainly entering the busier time of the season. Although, if you remember last year's season, it felt like the entire season was the busy time of the season. I know for us meteorologists, 2020 was sort of crazy. But luckily this year, we've had a bit of a break. We started off really fast. We had five storms. We had The last named storm was Elsa back in early July, but we've had a nice month-long break, which is fairly typical, actually. And now we had Fred, tropical storm Fred that formed a couple days ago in the Caribbean, since moved across Hispaniola, now just north of Cuba. And it really doesn't look that great here as we talk on Thursday night, but it may try to get its act together as it moves to the northwest, just north of Cuba and through the Florida Straits. It may, at this point, the likely scenario is that it brings heavy rainfall to the Florida Peninsula and the southeast into the weekend and early next week. And doesn't at this point doesn't look like a major wind or storm surge threat, mainly a inland freshwater flooding threat. So that's sort of what we expect from Fred. Another one behind it, though, there's another tropical wave that may become what the next name would be Grace. And that would be moving towards the Lesser Antilles late week and into early next week. And, you know, we're entering a time of year where we typically start to see more activity in the tropics, and we reach our peak activity from a what's normal standpoint by the middle of September. So we've got about two and a half months here of a pretty, probably a pretty active rest of the hurricane season.
Yeah, just what we need on top of COVID. Bex, I know you had some thoughts on that, right?
Well, I just think it's that time of year, if not even a couple of months earlier, to be thinking about your hurricane preparedness plan. If you are, you know, in any coastal location, and even if you're a bit inland, you could still experience flooding. But now is a good time to, you know, have a go bag ready, something that, you know, contains all the information you would need if you were to need to evacuate quickly, and have a, you know, a couple different evacuation routes planned out. Have some communication methods with your family, your friends, you know, just check in with the people around you and make sure you have a really good plan in place for if and when a storm does approach. I think storms like Fred that are probably not going to do a whole lot more than, you know, some really heavy rain are a good reminder that the tropics are still active. We are heading into peak hurricane season, and you know, if last year is any reminder, you know, it's good to be prepared.
And don't think it won't happen to me, which too many people do. Jamie, you brought up a thought on disaster preparedness in the face of climate change and extreme weather events. And God knows 2020 alone was crazy with extreme weather events. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I just think that, you know, as we see more and more frequent, 100-year storms or 100-year floods or, you know, other major events that seem to be happening back to back to back year after year, it occurs to me, and I think a lot of other preparedness people, that it's incumbent upon us to really build community resilience and make sure people are more aware that, okay, just because it was 20 years since the last bad flood and we had one last year, the chances are much greater with the more extreme weather, it seems like, that we'd have another one, you know, sooner than 20 years or whatever. And so I think, you know, I think it might be a good discussion for us to have to talk about how often is extreme weather ramping up, and what do we do to prepare in a given community, both for ourselves and for the people around us.
Well, not only that, but we have to take more of an all hazards approach. I mean, people that only ever see tornadoes are now getting floods and tsunamis and whatever else. So you can't just think, you know, well, there's just one danger and nothing else. Dan, I'm sure you got thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really relates closely to some of the big news in the climate and weather world in the last few days, which is the release of the latest IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report that came out, and that really talks about the link between extreme weather events and climate change, and how those two things are linked together. And in the past, I mean, these reports, you know, they're a UN body that comes out with these reports. I think it's the seventh or eighth version of this, and they come out every like 7 or 8 years. And this one was the first one that really was able to link definitively from a scientific standpoint, the connection between extreme weather events and climate change and how they play into each other. And it's, you know, as Jamie was just saying there, they really do tie in, and we can start to extract like this event occurred and it was made X amount worse because of climate change. So I think that's a really interesting discussion going forward with how these extreme weather events, whether it be flooding or extreme temperatures like the drought in the West right now, the wildfires and all those types of events and how they relate to our changing climate. So that's a interesting report too, if anyone's interested in that. There's a good summary you can find online, I'm sure, about the latest IPCC report.
Yes, I definitely would like to see that. And, you know, you hear about things in other countries like major, huge lakes drying up, which is creating, you know, water shortages here, as if the droughts weren't enough. Jamie, you had some thoughts?
Yeah, quick question, Dan, and I don't know if you had a chance to look into this specifically, but I noticed that not, you know, we think about the wildfires here in the U.S., in the West and Southwest that have been striking recently. But I've seen a lot of reports in the news about increased wildfires in places like Turkey and Greece and the parts of the Mediterranean, which I had really never noticed before, that they have a wildfire season too.
Yeah, I can't say I'm an expert at that when it comes to international wildfires. We do look at that at AccuWeather and how not just wildfires, but all these types of different weather events impact places outside of the United States. And the ones in Turkey and Greece, as you mentioned, were quite impactful. And my understanding is also quite unusual. And it hasn't been just that, too. There's been some pretty extreme heat in parts of Europe and Asia this year. The flooding event that took place in Germany about a month ago was extremely unusual, where places got 4 to 8 inches of rain in about 12 hours or less. And there was many people that unfortunately perished in Western Germany. That was a very unusual event. So it's certainly not confined to the United States, although we hear a lot about that here, but there's places that have been hit hard by all sorts of different types of weather events outside of the U.S. over the last several months and several years.
That's a little scary. Yeah, I remember the thing with Germany. That was awful and certainly not expected. Becky?
Yeah, I think the other thing I wanted to mention tonight, just it seems like there's so many wildfires happening, and this is obviously directly tied into the conversation that we were just having about climate change and things being so dry and the lack of water. And the wildfire season is, you know, is lengthening. It's becoming worse. It's becoming, you know, more widespread. And I think it's really, really important, and honestly, this could be an entire episode in and of itself, probably, but it's really important that people have a wildfire action plan, an emergency plan that they know exactly how they're going to act and evacuate and what they're going to grab. And honestly, this is much more urgent than even a hurricane evacuation plan, because as we've seen and talked about in fires like the Paradise Fire a couple of years ago, you may not have more than, honestly, seconds, a minute if you're lucky, and the evacuation route that you thought you had may be gone. And it's just, it's so sobering to think about. But unfortunately, if you live in the Western states, and probably even expanding farther east at this point, anywhere that is impacted by drought and has, you know, a lot of woods, a lot of dry area, fuel for fire, you need to be thinking about what your plan is going to be for wildfire. You need to have a go bag. You need to have a communication plan with your family. I just Google, you know, wildfire preparedness, wildfire emergency action plan, and just make sure that you know exactly how you're going to act if and when a wildfire threatens your area.
Well, and on the issue of go bags, I think everybody should have one, you know, with basic extra meds in it and extra glasses and, you know, things like that that you need on a daily basis. We have some folks living here now who were neighbors in the fire we had last year, and they got burned out in a heartbeat. They had enough time to grab their dog and take off. They, you know, so they had to start completely over. So I couldn't agree with you more. And yes, that should be an entire episode. Jamie? Is that you?
Yeah, that's me. I just wanted to just point out, Becky was saying Google it, but ready.gov/wildfires is a location that you can look up preparedness, how to stay safe during, after wildfire resources, just a ton of additional things there that are available for you through FEMA and the federal government resources. So, you know, it talks about make an emergency plan, review your important documents, strengthen your home, just kind of all sorts of things about resilience, and then especially knowing your evacuation zone and routes for you, your family, your pets, relatives, everybody. As Becky stressed, you could, having this stuff ready ahead of time, you know, could save you valuable minutes and give you the ability to get out safely.
Well, and just think about things like meds. You're not going to be able to, you know, if you have critical cardiac meds, you're not going to be able to get them refilled anytime soon. There's a process. So, you know, ask your doctor for an extra bottle should you have to leave in a hurry. Just basic things like that you need on a daily basis. Boy, we could definitely spend some more time on this. When's the smoke going away, Becky, in Colorado, from everybody else's fire?
Gosh, actually, Dan might have a better answer on that, because that's pretty related to, you know, atmospheric flow. I looked at the satellite just now, and it still was pretty socked in there today. What does it look like for the next few days, Dan?
Yeah, it's been really a pretty crazy pattern this year with just how much smoke there is in the West. And when you have a lot of fires, you have a lot of smoke. And I don't think it really gets a whole lot better over the next several days. I mean, you can get a day or two where you get the wind out of a different direction. It can help to reduce some of the smoke. But I don't really see much change in the weather pattern. Maybe until middle to of next week, that might help clear out some of the smoke and increase, you know, to make the air quality better out there. So it's, you know, we're only in August too, unfortunately. Like the wildfire season in a lot of the West is, well, at this point, it seems like it's a year round season, but historically the worst part of the season in the Southwest and in parts of the southern half of California is not until September and October. So it's going to be a long next several months, just as we saw last year for a lot of places in the West with wildfires.
Oh, it never ends, does it? Well, Jamie, I think we've whetted their appetite for a lot of topics coming up. I need to get back on with the community and see what they're thinking and bring in some of those ideas, too. But for now.
Yeah, well, we can definitely look into this, maybe do a more full episode. It might be interesting to try to connect with somebody in our group out there that might have some experience with wildfire response and management to come on the show. So if you are one of those folks, reach out to us on the Facebook group. Let us know that you're available. Maybe get in touch with Sam and we can get you on the show to just talk a little bit about some of the things that go into the disaster preparedness and management side of wildfires. Be interesting to bring you on and talk about that. Other than that, I'd like to thank Joe for coming on. As always, thank Paragon Medical Education Group for sponsoring the show, as they always do. Please reach out to them at paragonmedicalgroup.com. As Joe was saying, they're teaching a flight paramedic course and test preparedness class this week, and they do those things on a regular basis. So if that's something that interests you, or any other of those types of preparedness and training courses that they put on in addition to all the other fun things they do, you can check that out at paragonmedicalgroup.com. So check them out for sure. Let's see. Dan, where can folks find you if they want to follow what you're doing with the weather stuff there?
You can follow me on Twitter mainly at WXDepot, DEPO, also on Facebook in the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
Awesome. How about you, Becky?
At Twitter, WX_Bex, BECKS, and Facebook, the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
Excellent. And Sam?
In those same social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, certainly in our wonderful community at Facebook and disasterpodcast.com. What about you, Jamie?
Well, under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations. Look forward to seeing folks there. And, of course, disasterpodcast.com, where on each episode page right at the top below the player, you can subscribe to the show. So don't forget about that. Using your favorite podcast app, just click iOS or Android, whatever your choices are. The instantaneous links will pop up, and you can go ahead and subscribe very easily that way. But anyway, good show tonight, Sam. I think it was a great collection of topics to cover in the episode tonight. Glad we got able to catch up with Joe.
Absolutely. And the more we talk to Joe about COVID, the more head shaking I do. It's crazy. So we'll obviously be talking to him more about that because he definitely has his finger on the pulse of COVID. But, you know, in general, you know, going back to what Becky was saying, don't put your head in the sand. Be prepared.